For everything there is a season. For being born, for dying, for love and hate and war and peace. For everything there is a season. For basketball from the fall to June. For hockey about the same. For football from the first week in September, preseason doesn't count until the first Sunday in February. And for baseball from opening day in April until the World Series in late October. November is too late. October. For everything, there is a season. The winter games in winter and the summer games in summer. And oh, you can play golf in the southern hemisphere in January and Hawaii pretty much any time of the year. But here in this part of the world, the season goes from the first nice day, and it doesn't have to be really nice, right? In the spring to the last decent day in the fall. I took up running in April, but my running friends tell me that running in winter is great. You don't sweat and you have the bike path all to yourself. We'll see. For everything, there is a season. My colleagues in New England have a tradition of preaching on baseball near opening day, of extolling the Red Sox, the beginning of spring. For years, these were sermons on perseverance and hope despite failure, until finally the Red Sox broke the curse of the Bambino and won a pennant. But never fear, for Cubs fans can still hear sermons on patience and how it is the game, not the victory, that matters, and how you hold out hope even though there is no evidence that such hope is justified. 104 years since a World Series pennant has been added to Wrigley Field. That is a long time. But for Cubs fans, it isn't about the winning, right? It's about the experience. The chase is the end of every fan's desire. And the sense of community made by fellow fans, the sense of belonging to something greater than yourself. Me, I'm a Packers fan. And our ethos is a little bit different. Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. So said the legendary Vince Lombardi. Of course, we don't win every time. I remember 2 years ago when the Packers had that amazing regular season and then lost in the first playoff game. I was crushed, crushed. I wasn't always a Packers fan. Way back when I was a kid, I was a Seattle Seahawks fan and a Seattle Supersonics fan and a Seattle Mariners fan. But then the Mariners traded away Ken Griffey Jr. and the Sonics were sold and moved to Oklahoma. And well, I've lived outside of Seattle longer than I live there. I'll still root for the Hawks as long as they're not playing the Pack. I love football. I know it has its problems, but I still love it. The organized athleticism, the dramatic play, the interception or the sack, the successful Hail Mary, the breakout run around the corner. I like baseball and basketball too, especially the minor leagues, college games. Sitting up close, good teamwork, solid play. But football is my favorite. Most of you are sports fans too. Maybe you like team games or individual events, track and field or figure skating or whatever it is. We spend a lot of our time and a lot of our money on sports, not just in this country. This isn't an American thing. Other countries do too. Human beings have always loved sport. There was a Dutch cultural critic and anthropologist, Johan Huizinga, who wrote about play and sport as ritual activity. It was he who coined the phrase, the magic circle. He wrote about how the temple and the playground or the field are similar. They're spaces set aside from everyday life, with boundaries, when you are in the sacred space and when you are out. There are rules, which seem arbitrary, especially to outsiders, but have a history and a purpose. And the more you know about what's going on, the richer your experience of it, the full context of the scripture passage, how that one in Luke is different than the one in Matthew, or what it means that the offense is using a four wideout formation. That the experience for the observer is aesthetically beautiful. He argues that play is a human universal, indeed an animal universal, for we're not the only animals to play. Pigs want to run and jump and fly too, even if they need help to do it, even if elephants don't think they can do it at all. Huizinga said that ritual, worship, what we are doing right now, right here, this is sacred play. We're playing, doing things which have no intrinsic utilitarian purpose. We're playing. And Huizinga says that play is the most important thing we do. Playing doesn't make it unimportant, it makes it very important, because it is in play that we figure out how to be together as people, that we work out the meanings of our lives and our times, and we deal with the realities of both joy and sorrow. We put it into a context, a container, so that we can figure it out. Think about the similarities between religion and sport. Both are, strictly speaking, unnecessary. They won't bring in the crops or fix the roof. Both are sometimes awe-inspiring events. Both have their own particular language and history and ritual. And there are many varieties of each. And although there are similarities between, say, Buddhism and Hinduism, or between soccer and basketball, they're not the same. Both are tribal, with a sense of identity with something larger than yourself. This is important. I can sit down with a fellow Packers fan and have a kinship, although we might have nothing else in common at all. In both sport and religion, we acknowledge the continuity of life, despite both victory and defeat. Though your team won the championship last season, they still play again next year. There's no guarantees. And if they didn't win, well, what do Cubs fans say? There's always next year. Both, too, have their problems. Let's be honest. Both religion and sport have histories of sexism and exclusion. I thank Dale for mentioning the impact of Title IX, a revolution in the world of sports in this country, breaking down those walls, though we are obviously not yet on equal footing. Religion has historically and currently suffered from the same problem. Both religion and sport get into trouble when they are immersed in the state, in partisan politics, or get too interested in wealth, in getting and keeping money. The decision of the Seattle Mariners to trade away Ken Griffey Jr. to make a short-term buck for their multi-millionaire owner really turned me off pro baseball. One reason I like the Packers is that they're publicly owned, and it's the game that matters and not the owner's wallet. I like civic projects and downtown renewal, but if I was ever asked to vote to spend public money on luxury skyboxes, forget it. No way. I have no problem with athletes making lots of money. They could do things I could never do. But superstars are role models, and they had better be good and decent people. They don't have to be perfect, but people who give back to their communities, which most of them do really well, actually, but some don't. Religion suffers from the same temptations. We get interested in the approval of the state. We worry about money and forget that money serves the mission and not the other way around. Most religious leaders and religious people are doing their best, though they are not perfect, to live as well as they can, but some are not even trying. We here at this church, whether we are theists or atheists or agnostics, Christians or pagans or skeptics or Buddhists, whatever else we might be, we are also humanists. To be a religious humanist, whatever we might also believe about God and myth and ritual, to be a religious humanist means to say that nothing human is alien from the religious, that the joys and sorrows of human life are religious, that our knowledge and creativity and our humanity and our humility are all religious things, that our bodies are religious. We make no dividing line between the human and the divine, but we see humanity as infused with divinity. So we can look at sport and celebrate it as an act of humanity. We see in sport all the human virtues and vices, courage and fear, selflessness and egoism, compassion and cruelty, honor and deceit. We see the beauty and strength of the human body, and we see too its fragility in injuries or artificial enhancements. We can celebrate sport and get into it and shout and cry and cheer, and we can play ourselves and feel alive and part of something bigger than us, and that's all good. The danger, of course, is that we make it into an idol. In particular, it is a danger when we make winning the idol, for that leads directly into cheating, to steroids and violence and all the rest. But even if we're just making sport itself into an idol, that is a danger. The theologian Paul Tillich says that whatever we make into our object of ultimate concern, that for us is God. Do you know people who make their sports team into the object of ultimate concern, who wrap their lives in it, who derive their full measure of happiness or misery from how their team is doing? This can cross over into a form of idolatry, into worshiping the team, the game, the players. I mean, I suppose if you want to make that the object of your ultimate concern, that's your business. There are worse things. Many people make money or their racial identity or their job or their addiction into their object of ultimate concern. And given those choices, I think the Cubs or the Packers or the U.S. women's soccer team are probably better choices. But the sports team, the athlete, they might be an incarnation of the spirit of life, a representation of it into the world, something to enjoy and celebrate, but they're not the spirit of life itself. The spirit is bigger and deeper and more than sport. It's bigger and deeper and more than church, too. That's another similarity between sport and religion. Religious folks sometimes think that their religion is worthy of ultimate concern, when religion is just one of many ways to point to the Spirit, to help us live in harmony with that wider, deeper, more mysterious reality. As Bishop Shelby Spong put it, God is not a Christian. Or as the Buddhists say, don't confuse the finger pointing at the moon with the moon itself. So it should go without saying, but it doesn't. Don't pray to win the game before you play or you watch. Don't pray to win. Pray, if you pray, that everyone will walk off the field or the track uninjured and having done their best. Don't say the victory belongs to God unless you are also willing to say the defeat belongs to God. Otherwise, your God is too small to be worthy of the name. Religion is sacred play. Like children playing make-believe house or war or work or mystery, it is how we work out together what it means. All play is like this. It is a way to work out through ritual and fun and aesthetic beauty what matters, what is true, and who we are. We express in play our creativity, our humanity, our joy, and our despair. This is true in music and painting and poetry and sculpture and sport. Whether we play the viola or sing the tenor solo or just listen, we experience in music the creativity and power and wonder of the Spirit, flowing through that piece of music and that performance. Whether we put paint on paper or we go to the museum and look at it, we are playing. Playing with meaning and structure and possibility. And whether we're connecting the head of the club with the face of the ball or watching the runner jump off the base and slide into third seconds before the ball gets there, we are experiencing the human body do amazing things and celebrating life and strength and what is possible. It's play, and play matters. Let's not make an idol of it, but it matters. It is life shown to us from the magic circle, clarified so we can see it. It is joy and sorrow and struggle and perseverance and hope. It is fun and true and worthy. And whatever form of play you love, art, music, games, stories, or sport, whether the season of your sport is beginning or ending or in the middle, I invite you, in these last weeks of August, in the fall to come, and winter, and spring, and summer after, to enjoy your play. To play hard, and fair, and well, and to rejoice in all those who do the same, be they small children or grown women and men. Whether you play yourself or observe the game from the stands, the grass, the bar stool, or your own couch, enjoy the play. Find the meaning and the beauty in it. See it in your own life, mirrored and clarified and simmered to its essence. Be inspired by what athletes can do and get out on the field, the course, the path, yourself. Enjoy the play. Let it give you joy and hope and comfort and a few minutes of peace. Enjoy the play. For play, play of any kind, is life set before us. So, game on. Let's play. Go Pack. Have heart. Enjoy the chase. Let's sing. Please rise in body and or in spirit.